Call the first case.
You may proceed.
Good morning. Mr. Chief Justice, Honorable Justices, may it please the Court. Bonnie Hoffman on behalf of the appellant, Douglas Jackson, we respectfully request this Court vacate the judgment entered against Mr. Jackson for restitution, as the restitution obligation had concluded nearly 12 years prior to the entry of the judgment in this case. There are two sources of the restitution obligation that was outlined in this case, one being the plea agreement and the second being the orders of the Court. In 1998, Mr. Jackson and the Commonwealth presented to the Court a proposed plea agreement which included among its conditions that Mr. Jackson pay restitution on behalf of the victim in the case, Ms. Reeves. The Court accepted the agreement and then embodied that in terms of its sentencing order, which specifically provided that Mr. Jackson be sentenced to 3 years in prison and suspended 2 years of that on a series of conditions, including a condition that he pay restitution. Over the course of the next several years, Mr. Jackson reappeared before the Court, and finally in October of 2002, he was found in violation of his probation. At that time, the Court entered a new order, and when it did so, I suggest to the Court, it eliminated the restitution obligation in Mr. Jackson's case. Specifically, the Court entered an order and directed that Mr. Jackson have his sentence vacated, remanded him to custody to serve an active period of 2 years.
May I interrupt you there, Counsel? The order says that the suspension of the execution of the balance of the sentence was vacated.
Correct.
But generally speaking, courts don't have the authority to vacate sentences after 21 days after issuing it. They can suspend or not suspend, but vacating a sentence or modifying it without there being statutory authority is problematic, is it not?
Your Honor, I suggest to the Court what occurred once Mr. Jackson was brought before the Court on an allegation he had violated his probation. Pursuant to 19-2306, the Court has an obligation upon finding him in violation to revoke the suspended sentence, and then the Court has the option to either resuspend all or part of the sentence, as well as the option to change any of the terms and conditions.
Okay, can I stop you there? I follow that and agree with you. But does the Court have the power to vacate a suspended or unsuspended sentence?
I don't know that the Court's use of the term vacate may have been the most appropriate language to use, but I think what the Court ultimately did by vacating, or in this case invoking, the previously suspended sentence and imposing it, what the Court did is engaged in a new sentencing event. And when that occurs, the Court has the authority to amend the terms of that sentence and in essence creates a new sentencing event.
Before you go on, can I bring this to closure? The order we're looking at page 29, it vacates the suspension, so it doesn't purport to do the problematic thing of vacating the sentence years after the sentence had been issued. But then it says, after the suspension is vacated, and we have two charges with 2 years active, less 45 days or thereabout, on two separate charges.
Correct.
It mentions that there were 2 years for each of the two charges that had been suspended. And then it says, but he's going to have to serve two of those years. Well, that's two out of four.
Correct.
The other 2 years didn't go away. Those weren't vacated.
The Court, and I agree that the language of the order provides, Mr. Jackson originally had 4 years of which the Court vacated, and in essence what it does is it imposes the entirety of the 4 years. By statute, the Court has to, upon the finding that he's in violation, revoke the suspension of the entire 4 years. The Court then, again, engages in a new sentencing event. It's bounded. It can impose no more than
so
the sentence.
You've
imposed.
Got four active years,
correct,
less 45, but put that aside for the purpose of our discussion. He's got four active years, two on two charges. He's given two.
Correct.
So there's two that have not been given, but are there by virtue of the original sentencing order. So whether the judge intended or specifically or not, the order appears to leave an unvacated 2-year term present. Am I reading it incorrectly from your perspective?
You're not reading it incorrectly in that the court only imposed an active sentence of 2 years.
So there's 2 years still there that...
There's 2 years that it still had not had anything done to it. The court took no further action with those 2 years. Because if you look at the language of the order provides that the court recognizes there were 4 years, and the court imposes an active term of two.
So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but does that mean that they're... Following this order, October 22, 2002, there's an implicit suspension, well, not suspension, but, you know, term of good behavior, condition of good behavior implied in law for 2 active years that are still technically out there.
Your Honor, I suggested, unfortunately, back in 2002, the issue wasn't raised. I think once the court imposes the 2 years and elects to do nothing else with the other two, that the court can either interpret that order to mean that the other 2 years remain in a vacated position for a period of good behavior, but I suggest that's not what occurred in this case. What occurred in this case is the court simply said, of that 4 years, I'm simply directing you to serve 2 years, and that satisfies your obligation to this court. And it's just the court has the authority to do that because the court, when it engaged in the probation violation hearing, in essence has the opportunity to resentence Mr. Jackson.
Can I follow that? But in a resentencing event in revocation, can a court say this? Suppose he'd said it very expressly. You have 2 years, 45 days put aside, 2 years and 2 charges. I'm going to vacate the 2-year active term on charge one. It's vacated. I'm not going to suspend it. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm vacating it right now. Vacating an order that was entered in 1998, a portion of order. On the other, I'm going to impose the other two. Wouldn't the vacature of the act of the previously suspended remaining 2 years of the first charge be outside the authority of a court in a revocation proceeding?
I think if the court used the language that Your Honor is describing, which is that I'm going to, in essence, eliminate the original 1998 order, which is, in essence, what the court is
discussing. The 2 years left on.
And impose the sentence on the other case, I think there would be potentially an issue. But in this case, what the court did is the court imposed 4 years. The court then went on to direct that 2 years of active time be served and concluded the case, which the court has the authority to do.
So he imposed 4 years, suspended 2, that leaves 2 that's imposed but implicitly suspended.
It's just the court didn't suspend the other 2. The court directed, I'm imposing 4 years, I'm directing that you spend 2 years of active incarceration. The court did not take any other step with the remaining 2 years, and I'd suggest the court has the authority to direct that Mr. Jackson served no more than the 2 years that the court directed that he served. When the court did that, and specifically when the court did so without including a restitution obligation going forward, the court, by its order, eliminated the restitution obligation because the restitution obligation was a condition of the suspension of the sentence. And more importantly, once the court entered the order and did not carry forward any continuing obligation for restitution, it eliminated that condition, and the court had the authority to do so. Not only had the authority under 306 to, in essence, engage in a new sentencing event and amend with it any of the terms that it existed, but by statute under 19.2.358, a court has the authority to reduce or remit a restitution obligation. The court has the authority at any time to amend terms, even terms that arose as part of a plea agreement. And so by its order, the court eliminated the restitution obligation. And once it did so, there was no restitution obligation to be reimposed or to become the subject of the judgment that occurred in 2014 when the Commonwealth moved to enter a judgment for the unpaid restitution. Once the court changed the order and the order eliminated restitution, then there was no basis upon which to enter the judgment. This court previously, or the Court of Appeals previously in Rusnik, had indicated that when a court order is silent as to the term of restitution, it is no longer implied, even if there's a discussion of restitution or there have been pre-existing obligations for restitution, once that restitution obligation was eliminated with the new sentencing event, it simply ceased to exist.
Well, now, the payment of costs was also listed under the conditions of the suspended sentence. Surely you don't think that the defendant's obligation to pay the costs of the proceedings were somehow extinguished?
Absolutely not, because the order explicitly provided that a condition was that he pay his costs. And so the costs that were assessed for the 2002 proceeding existed and carried forward because the order provided that Mr. Jackson was obligated to pay his costs. And so the court created that obligation, just like the court could have carried forward a continuing obligation.
Which order are you talking about, the original one?
Well, so the original order, which imposed costs, under 19.2336, when a court assesses costs, it instantaneously becomes the subject of a judgment for the Commonwealth. And once that judgment's in place, it remains. And had, in this case, a judgment been entered for the restitution in 1998, we might be in a different position. So in 1998, when his costs were assessed, they were part of a judgment, and that obligation continued to carry forward until it was paid.
So are you saying that because that first order made it a condition, that didn't make it a judgment? Is that your position?
So because it was a condition of probation, unless somebody affirmatively came in and requested a judgment, so under the statute, under 19.2305.2, a victim has a right to seek entry of a judgment upon an order of restitution from the court. But that obligation is tied to the order of restitution. And in 1998, had the victim come forward, or had the Commonwealth on behalf of the victim come forward and requested the entry of a judgment.
Is there any reason why the court couldn't have entered judgment at that time on the restitution and made it a condition both?
There is nothing that would have prohibited the court in 1998 or any time up until 2002 to enter that judgment. But in 2002, having no judgment entered, when the court resentenced Mr. Jackson on his probation violation, it eliminated that restitution obligation.
What would the judgment say if it were not to say, quote, the defendant shall make restitution? It is so ordered. There's your judgment.
The court orders him to pay restitution, and the court then has the authority to change that order at any time, so long as it meets one of the other statutory provisions, which I'd suggest in this case both 19.2358 would give the authority to the court to change that order of restitution.
What I'm implying, though, is that why can't the restitution provision serve two purposes? One purpose is I'm ordering you to pay restitution. Condition or no condition of the sentence, that's not a problem. And secondly, I want to underscore the fact that I really want you to pay restitution. I'm going to condition the suspended term on you paying it. So it has two functions. One is independent of the other.
It can have both functions. The judgment we're talking about is a civil judgment, docketed on the books as a civil judgment. And that requires an affirmative act by the court. The court could have that day entered a civil judgment, but it has to do so. It's a separate step from the court ordering restitution.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you saying that the judgment is not a judgment until it's docketed? Is that what your position is?
I would suggest the court has to affirmatively order the judgment to exist. And when the court simply orders the payment of restitution, that is separate from the ordering of a judgment on behalf of the victim in this case.
So you think it's wrong to interpret the 1998 order to say this is a judgment? It's just
a
condition.
It would be incorrect to say that the 1998 order reflects the entry of the judgment.
Okay.
If the court has no other questions, I'd like to reserve my remaining time.
Good morning, Chief Justice, the Honorable Justices of this Court. May it please the Court, my name is Amy McMullen, and I represent the Commonwealth in this appeal. This Court has the opportunity in this case to solve the mystery posed by Judge Brown, who was the trial court judge in this case. Does restitution disappear? I urge this Court to find that it does not, absent a specific...
May I ask you this?
Yes.
Does the 2 years on the original sentence disappear?
Your Honor, with all due respect, I notice the same thing that the court did in the interpretation of the orders. I think that I think it goes without saying that the orders in this case are not well written. They are difficult to interpret, and because the 2 years that the court imposed in this case are not specified to one case number or the other, only one case is subject to this court. So I am unfortunately not in a position to interpret that order with regard to that. And this court is unfortunately not in a position to understand what the court meant by that because the cases had no transcripts. We were not able to provide transcripts because they were so old.
But the argument of the appellant appears to be that this October 2002 order ended the criminal case. It's done. There's nothing left, right?
Yes.
But if that premise is untrue and there's 2 years still out there that hadn't been addressed and they don't go away, and arguably it could be said the court has no authority to vacate the 2 years, vacate a suspension, or suspend it indefinitely, but not vacate the sentence itself, or reduce it, basically, years after the fact.
Yes, sir.
Doesn't that affect all of the analysis that follows in this case, whatever the answer is to that fork-in-the-road question?
To the extent that it depends on how the court determines the interpretation of 19.2306 subsection C, I would say yes, it does.
But 306 doesn't say you can vacate a sentence. It says you can vacate a suspended term and impose it, or impose half, or little, or whatever.
That's correct, Judge. I would suggest that it changes the analysis with regard to 19.2306 because 19.2306 subsection C delineates specifically, numeral 2 delineates, the court may impose other terms and conditions if it resuspends a sentence. To the extent that it would change the analysis as to whether there was additional time resuspended, I would agree. And quite frankly, I would suggest if the court were to adopt that interpretation that there are still 2 years hanging out there, then I would suggest that appellant's assertion that this was a new sentencing event in which the court could eliminate restitution would be correct. But the Commonwealth asserts in this case that the provisions of 19.2306 subsection C suggest that when a court revokes an entire sentence and terminates probation, the original sentence is in effect. And the restitution obligation was part of the original sentence that was adopted by the trial court in 1998 in the sentencing order in which the defendant unconditionally agreed to pay restitution in the amount of $4,375 to Roberta Reeves.
Run it by me again. Where did it happen?
I'm sorry. In 1998, the defendant entered into a plea agreement with the Commonwealth, and there were two specific provisions in that plea agreement. Number two specifically stated that either party can ask for whatever they want. There will be a pre-sentence investigation. We make no agreements as to sentence. We make no agreements as to programs. And then the separate condition of the plea agreement, number three, stated the defendant shall pay restitution of $4,375 to Roberta Reeves. No questions asked. Not part of any sentence. This is a separate provision. This is a separate condition.
Right, but that's not an order of the court. That was a plea agreement.
The sentencing order encompassed the plea agreement, and that was pursuant to the rule. Hold this for a moment. Rule 3A8C3, where it said that the court shall inform the defendant that it will embody in its judgment and sentence disposition provided for in this agreement.
Where did the court do that, though?
I think when it ordered restitution, from the plea agreement hearing adopted the plea agreement and imposed all the conditions within, as well as the sentencing order adopted the restitution condition, I believe that that's where the court did that.
Okay.
I don't think that the plea agreement, and I think that certainly a plea agreement this court has interpreted, and there's significant case law to suggest that a plea agreement is a written contract between the parties. And if one party fails to perform, the other party may request specific performance. Now, we don't have specific performance here. We can't force someone to pay. And certainly the Commonwealth concedes that we had no ability to impose additional incarceration pursuant to 19.2306 if the scenario were, as Your Honor suggested, 10 years later. 19.2306 contains a specific provision. You have to bring the proceeding within a year. There are other provisions of the code that suggest time limits. But the docketing of the restitution does not contain a time limit. 19.2305.2 does not contain a provision. It does not contain language that suggests that the judgment can only be docketed during a period of suspended sentence, during a period of probation, or within a certain time frame. So I would suggest to the court that the court should not impose a time limitation when the legislature did not deem it fit to impose one in the statute.
Did I hear you say that the trial court incorporated the terms of the plea agreement into the sentencing order?
Yes, Judge.
Where? It's at page 8, 9, and 10 of the appendix.
Your Honor, with regard to the restitution condition on page 9.
Well, that's different. The only thing that's incorporated is that the defendant under restitution shall make restitution and pay costs in accordance with a schedule to be established by the probation and parole officer and filed with the court within 30 days. So it's not incorporated, a plea agreement. You have the plea agreement in front of the court. That's not incorporated. What is anticipated to be incorporated is the schedule that was not even in existence at the time the sentencing order was entered.
Your Honor, I would suggest that the order memorializing the plea hearing, specifically on page 5, would incorporate that. And I think that the two orders act in tandem to suggest that the restitution obligation as part of the plea agreement was incorporated within the court's judgment. specifically, Your Honor, page 5, middle of the page, in the order, after inquiring as to why the said agreement was in the public interest and after hearing the representations of counsel, the court doth agree to abide by the terms and conditions therein. One of the conditions was that the defendant unconditionally shall make restitution in the amount of $4,375 to Roberta Reeves.
And you think that's incorporation?
That would be the Commonwealth's position, yes, sir.
I don't think so.
Counsel, tell me again your theory as to when the court doesn't mention restitution in its 2002 order, that restitution is still part of the mix?
Your Honor, I think when appellant cites numerous case law in the provisions of 19.2.306 to suggest that of course, a probation violation hearing is a new sentencing event. And appellant relies very heavily on the Reinke case, in which time was revoked and it was resuspended, and the court certainly can impose new conditions upon that. The Commonwealth's position is that that case is distinguishable, and quite frankly, I don't believe there are any cases on point that deal with what happened to the obligations that the court imposes when the court revokes all the time. I know appellant in her in his reply brief suggested that there was that presented some sort of illogical interpretation of the statute if we were to take that to its logical conclusion. I would respectfully disagree with that. If the court considers the concept of post-release supervision under 19.2.295.2, that suggests that when a court imposes a time on a felony and all the time is active, the court shall impose a period of post-release incarceration. And I would suggest to the court that the Wright case, I believe it was the case that this court determined, the Wright versus Commonwealth case, suggests that even if a plea agreement or something is silent as to whether post-release supervision should apply in a particular case, it's mandated by statute. And therefore, it's inherent, even though that the plea agreement that the defendant signed off on, that he agreed to, was silent as to the concept of post-release supervision, the court could include that in an order because it was required by statute. I would suggest to the court that the provisions of law which counsel states allow a court to reconsider restitution or to amend restitution, 19.2354, 19.2358, those statutes do require or allow a court to require some showing by the defendant that he is unable to pay. Even in the case of the Esparza case, in which the Court of Appeals ruled that trial courts could amend sentences involved in plea agreements, in that particular case, that was based on a defendant's motion to reconsider. We don't have any of that here.
Counsel, can I interrupt you a second?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but can I ask you the same question I asked your opposing counsel?
Sure.
In its order, the court can make restitution a condition of probation or can enter a judgment for the restitution. Why do you think the order of this particular case in 1998 entered a judgment for restitution?
Why did the trial court not enter it, or why does the order
Why do you think that order does constitute a judgment for restitution as opposed to just a condition of probation?
Based on the incorporation of the plea agreement that I previously mentioned on page 5.
So it rises or falls on the incorporation of the plea agreement?
That would be the Commonwealth's position, yes.
Okay.
But is it the plea agreement, or is it simply the obligation to pay restitution, which originated in the plea agreement? I mean, why does it matter where it came from if the court orders it?
I'm not sure I understand the court's question.
Well, I wonder if we're making this more complicated than it appears to be. The defendant walked away from the 1998 hearing, and he has an order saying, you've got to pay restitution.
Correct.
Period. He also knows that if he doesn't pay restitution, he's going to violate his suspended condition. Well, in 2002, arguably, the suspension condition aspect is taken off the table, at least that's the argument. But that doesn't eliminate the original obligation if it's a freestanding obligation.
Yes.
So whether it came from a plea agreement or came from the judge ordering a sua sponte and it was unobjected to, isn't the only question whether or not this paragraph exists apart from the sole role of being a condition to suspended term?
Yes, and I would suggest that it does. It is unconditional that the defendant, as part of this plea agreement, agreed that he was going to be paying this restitution. And that is specifically why the trial court didn't the trial court was appropriate in docketing the civil judgment.
Did the trial court interpret its own order to have that meaning?
Did the trial court in 2014 interpret its own order from 1998? Mm-hmm. I believe it did. I think that Judge Brown's comment that the restitution, I don't think the restitution disappears somewhere, and essentially challenged the Supreme Court to resolve this issue.
Is he the third or fourth judge that handled this case? Or that
I did not count the number of judges, Your Honor, but I believe there probably were at least five or six different judges, yeah, as well as probably more than two dozen attorneys.
Well, let me go back to this one question I was asking, because you sort of changed your answer, and maybe Justice Kelsey has directed you in a different direction. The language of the order 1998 says that the court suspends certain time upon the following conditions, and then one of the conditions is restitution.
Yes.
And even though it doesn't say that I enter a judgment for restitution, you say that that is a judgment for restitution.
I would say that it serves both conditions. You have the restitution that, yes.
Try not to use the word condition, because I'm going to ask you about that.
I'm sorry.
Because what does the word condition mean? Can it be a conditional judgment? It's either a judgment or it's not a judgment, isn't it?
No, I believe it is a judgment, and I believe it's a twofold judgment. It is essentially the scenario that Justice Kelsey proposed to my opponent in this case. Yes, we want to underscore the importance of restitution, so we're going to tell you that if you don't pay your restitution, you're going to go to jail, but that doesn't obviate the original thing that you agreed to, which is what you have to pay. This obligation doesn't disappear.
Okay, and you now say that's regardless of the plea agreement. It's just the language of the order makes a judgment, right?
I think that, I don't know that those positions are contrary.
Okay.
Your Honor,
I think one other question. What do you think happens when the sentence was imposed in 2002 and there were 4 years, if the court only imposed 2 years, what happens to the other 2 years? Does it go away?
Okay. I would suggest that absent the court, and it is difficult in this case because the court was dealing with two separate sentences, and it's difficult to distinguish which sentence.
Let's say hypothetical, it was one sentence of 4 years, and the judge just wants to impose 2 years and be gone with you. I don't want any more to do with you. You serve 2 years, and I'm through with you. Can the court do that?
I don't believe under 19.2306 it can. Okay. I certainly think the interpretation that the original sentence shall be imposed is very clear. I don't think that, you know, certainly if the court were to impose the four-year sentence and then entertain a motion to reconsider under 19.2303, I think there could be some modifications through that mechanism, but we don't have that here.
Before transfer to the DOC,
correct.
Perhaps, but not afterwards.
Correct.
So before you lose the last seconds of your time, does that initial fork in the road question have to be answered by us before we go further into this debate?
I don't believe it does based on the existence of the condition in the plea agreement. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
I want to address first this idea that the court order from 1998 creates an automatic judgment. And I suggest that in this particular case, the court specifically chose the language that it did, which is restitution was an obligation of the suspended sentence. If inherently a restitution automatically became a judgment merely by the court directing payment, then there'd be no need for 19.2305.2, which provides a mechanism for a victim to seek a judgment based on a court's order of restitution. I'd equally suggest to the court that what the Commonwealth is proposing, this idea that by vacating and imposing a sentence, that inherently, because the court did not resuspend any sentence, if we are to accept that interpretation of the action, would inherently also then include the restitution obligation. The restitution obligation is not the sentence. The restitution obligation was a condition of the suspension of the sentence. The sentence is the prison term, in this case the 3-year term. Otherwise, what would happen, as could happen in this case, Mr. Jackson violates his probation, the court imposes the sentence, which includes all of the provisions the Commonwealth is suggesting, he serves 2 years in the penitentiary, and after he finishes it, he then has 3 years of probation, despite the fact that he has no longer a suspended sentence. So inherent in that idea
is... But you've assumed something right there. He has no longer a suspended sentence. Where did those 2 years go? They didn't evaporate.
And again, I think we're when we read the context of this, and over again, it's this problem about the missing 2 years. And I think if the court determines that this missing 2 years remains suspended, then inherently under 306, the court eliminated the restitution obligation because it engaged in a new sentencing event in which it suspended, either inherently somehow in not addressing those 2 years. It created a new sentencing event which clearly eliminated the restitution obligation when it did so, and when that occurred, there was no basis then to enter a judgment in this case. Independent of that, there is no independent existence of a restitution obligation under the plea agreement. The plea agreement is a vehicle, a proposal to the court, which the court accepts, but it is the court that sets the terms under which that plea agreement is placed into effect. How long money is to be paid, the conditions under which it is to be acted.
So in a nutshell, your argument is the trial judge in this court could have done exactly what it claims it ultimately did. They just didn't do it correctly. In 1998, if they just entered a separate order and docketed on the civil judgment, no big deal, we wouldn't even be here.
Absolutely. If the court had entered a judgment in 1998, the judgment would be in existence. It's good for 20 years.
Well, let me back up on that. It's still a judgment whether it's entered in the civil docket or not. That civil docket is just a way to collect it, isn't it?
It's just the court. The language in this order.
No, but could he put in the order, I enter a judgment against you for $4,395?
Absolutely. If the court had done that, we'd be in a different place, but that's not what the court did in this case, and when it failed to do so.
So docketing is sort of a thing to confuse us a little bit, because docketing is just a way to enforce the judgment, and it can be docketed within 20 years of when the judgment was entered, couldn't it?
I would suggest, again, had there been a judgment entered, the assessment of restitution is not the same as entering a judgment.
That's right, I know. I understand your position. Okay.
Thank you.
Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Call the next case.